Dominique, and
Hi,
welcome.
Andrew. Hi.
Welcome to restarting our week ahead videos after kind of a few weeks off between traveling, kind of both sides. Hope you've had a nice summer, although I guess it's always relatively summer, California.
It's always sunny in California, almost always. I had a great time. Thank you. How about you, Andrew?
Yes, had a great time. We got back last week from Asia, which was super interesting. Got a chance to see some clients out there as well, which was great. A few clients commented on our week ahead videos, and they even wanted the transcript. Actually, two of the
Ooh.
clients asked for about the transcript.
I'm scared.
Yes,
No
and
more
they wanted to
jokes.
run a. I'm not joking because they've been watching, but they wanted to run AI on it. To understand your views and then follow up on it and look at patterns. So
Ooh. I'm going to use AI to generate my comments on the economic releases.
right. We'll use AI to come up with
No, joke apart.
the
AI has, I mean, these neural networks introduce new possibilities. But
Right. Yeah.
I would like to keep this conversation flowing. And yes, let's keep the jokes in. Hopefully, it doesn't annoy too much our
Yeah.
listeners.
Agreed. Okay, so let's dive into this past week, including some of the data that we just saw out, spending and PCE, and just kind of your big takeaways. Obviously, we had some volatility early in August, and markets have been kind of calming down. Now we've had a lot of the big tech earnings out of the way. That's had some impact. Obviously, we had Jackson Hole. So, Jenna, let's go back over just this past kind of 4 or 5 days. Kind of, what are your biggest takeaways?
So this past week, to me, the most important data, given what we knew, we already knew where PC was going to print, was a humble weekly unemployment insurance claims. And that's because, we've had this, I mean, the perennial tug of war between recessionistas and expansionistas were still in full swing during summer. You know where I stand. Based on the data, I still think the US economy has a lot of oomph. And against me, we had this not very high quality, but high frequency indicator, which is unemployment insurance. It was going up and up, and understandably, people were nervous, but we've seen it stabilize over the past few weeks. So in my view, in terms of incremental change, this was probably the most important indicator.
Right. And the numbers I've seen that I think we've talked about in the past, numbers are similar to last year as well. So it's possible there's some new seasonality thing going on that hasn't been picked up in the past.
Yeah, I mean, we just have climate change, and so we get extreme weather patterns, and I think that's really distorting the seasonal adjustment, which is based on very long time series, is not capturing the strength of the hurricanes we get around the summer. I mean,
Right.
that's a plausible explanation, but
Heat, other things. Yeah.
yeah, the bottom line to me is that we can't just look at one data series, one data point, and freak out because it's a four standard deviation. Actually, it was not four standard deviation, but it's a bit
Was
unusual.
yeah.
We need to put things in context, and I think that's most of what I do, really.
Yep. And then just to kind of recap, your general view on cuts till the end of the year is what, and has that changed at all?
So it changed after the last NFP because I thought the NFP showed that extreme weather have events were starting to have a real impact on the US economy. I mean, I won't bore listeners with the gory details. It's all on in my NFP review and in the following weekly where I discussed economic resiliency. But to keep things concise, resiliency has to do with the ability of businesses and households to dip into their savings and to get extra credit when they are hit by a shock that lowers their cash flow. And the reaction to the NFP, where we saw an increase, a spike really in temporary layoff, suggested that this ability had weakened significantly. So on that basis, I thought the Fed would be justified in starting to cut in September. Also, remember, I was worried about political cost, but the expected value, if you will, of cutting close to the election and being accused of partisanship, that has come down simply because the risk of a Trump victory are much less than they were before President Biden pulled out from the race. And I have to claim, and I do this only once, this was one of my gray swans of December, the risk that
That was a good call.
would pull out.
Yeah. People called it in May. I was like, that's not that great a call, but call it in December when it looked pretty close then.
But
Yeah.
you know, back to Fed policies, so the Fed can be, afford to be a little bit more relaxed about its independence because the risk of a red wave is much less than a couple of months ago. So September, the question is 25 or 50. So in my view, if the NFP doesn't show that the July weakness was weather related, meaning that the data doesn't improve significantly, the Fed will go 50. My base case scenario, so I guess it's a segue into this coming data.
I think it
Yeah,
goes back
sorry.
to one of the discussions we had earlier in the year. Like, I still don't get none of the data is that weak. Okay, it's weaker than, we're probably not growing at 3.5% anymore, but we're still like, even after all this, we're still kind of like generally back to where we were pre-COVID on a lot of, it seems like a lot of the economic data. I just don't understand why would they cut 50?
So,
Why not just go slow? Now, I'm definitely in the camp that there's generally some benefits to, like, it's not necessarily going to make inflation go up a lot if they cut a lot, because there's clearly some things that lower interest rates creates the ability to borrow, to expand, to increase production and things like this. And actually, in the end, it's debatable how much, and obviously with the starting point, like, it is it inflationary, deflationary, certainly at from the point that we're at now. So, but I still feel like 50 is a big call. I guess we'll see on
So,
Friday, because the market, put so much time, so much effort into it. But clearly inflation is coming down, but it doesn't seem, outside of like last month's payrolls, like the data is generally that weak.
it's not so much about responding to a recession, and I agree with you, I'm still
Right.
not seeing the recession in the data.
Yeah.
It's more, calibrating the policy stance to nominal GDP growth. I mean, if nominal GDP growth is going, say, at 10% relative to 5%, you're going to have a different monetary policy. Actually, my example is not that great because 10% would mean, the economy is
Oh, yeah, give it
exploding.
more. Okay, yeah. But for
So
like
let's
a
say if
4, 5% versus 4% or something. Yeah.
Yeah, or yeah, or yeah, 4% meaning 2% real and
Yeah,
2% inflation.
exactly. That's what I'm saying.
So you would want a lower interest rate. So you want to, and in a way, that's the essence of the Taylor rule, right? That You are going to calibrate the policy stance, i.e., the policy rate, based on what's happening to inflation and unemployment. And unemployment is low. I think we're still at full employment, but inflation is lower than it was when the Fed, when was this? In 20, mid-23, mid last year, when the Fed hit the 5.3% mark. So you would want to lower the policy rate to reflect that decline in inflation so that the real policy rate doesn't get too high. And the issue is, in my view, is not so much about, pushing a lot more growth with low interest rate. It's more this issue of resiliency, of access to credit,
Right.
of what is happening to balance sheets. And obviously, if your interest rate, if your policy rate, your real policy rate is too high relative to what's going on in the economies, it's going to weaken balance sheets. And we're starting to see a little bit of that with delinquency rates on credit card loans, for instance. So in my view, it those rates are abnormally high, and that also has to do with poor risk management on the part of the lenders. That's a different story. Also,
Right.
there is a lot of money being lent to consumers that's not going through banks. So, this is potentially a
Yeah,
big issue.
there's definitely some extra leverage that's in there in the
And
system.
then if you look at surveys on SMEs' access to credit, you see that it's been curtailed since the Fed started hiking. You look even at banks' credit expansion, it's gone down. They've tightened credit standards and so on and so forth. So in my view, it would make sense to do 50 just to offset the decline in inflation for the past year and a half. And just as an insurance, you're starting to see
Right.
signs that the economy is not as resilient. So it's like, you have a cold and your doctor wants to give you antiviral, or you have COVID, say your doctor gives you antiviral medication early on to reduce the length, the
Right. So
duration of your
you
symptoms.
think if it's weak next Friday, it'll be pretty likely about a 50 cut. But then, do you see more cuts before the end of, after, before the end of the year? No, or this.
So based on my positive view of the economy, probably nothing until December, if at all.
Right.
So the preventative, so in my scenario, the cuts are preventative to restore that resiliency so that if we get hit by another shock, I mean, God knows, later hurricanes, the economy will, it will not show in the data. And so that would be the reason to front load
Fine, fine,
rather than
fine.
to be gradual.
Okay, great.
But I mean, there is one scenario that we have not spoken about and that could become relevant. I mean, basically, we've spoken about a rate cut responding to a recession or a rate cut normalizing policy, so preventing the real rates from getting too high. And then the other scenario that I don't think people are thinking enough is the risk that we could go back to the low inflation that prevailed before the pandemic. Right now, it's not my base case, but since no one is talking about it, and since the likelihood is not zero, I think it's worth keeping that in mind.
Yeah. And I would say to support that point, when we were in the low inflation period pre-COVID, that's, China was not even in the situation it is now. I mean, you have the second largest economy in the world that is hovering on deflation and clearly is overproducing goods,
100%. Yeah.
100%. Cars as a big example. And unless the tariffs go pretty high, anyway, it'll spill out even if there's tariffs. things that get sold in different places or whatever it is. Yeah, I mean, I saw all these studies just by the way, even on the tariff stuff, that it's like all these factories are set up, okay, maybe trade between the US and China has gone down, but trade between the US and, the rest of Southeast Asia has gone up significantly is because,
Sure,
like a
third
string or a
countries.
paint or something. Anyway, so and then for this coming week, what's anything big? I guess payrolls is really the big one.
So the payroll and the JOLTS, and I'll tell you why. The JOLTS is not a series. Actually, I like it more now. I've been criticizing the JOLTS
I
because the
know, yeah.
ratio of unemployment to vacancies has been on a secular decline. But I'm starting to think that there are good reasons linked to the risk of disinflation why this ratio has been going down. But more on this later. For this week, though, I think it's important because we've had this very polite discussion between, on the one hand, the Fed Waller, and on the other hand, the academic establishment, so Larry Summers, Olivier Blanchard, on whether inflation stabilization would be achieved through higher unemployment or through lower vacancies. And so far, it looks like Waller has won the argument. It's not over, but this is giving him more credibility. And in my view, Waller is one of the more influential FOMC members. And so he's been warning that now that this UV ratio, the so-called Beveridge curve, is flat, there is a risk that the next adjustment, the next part of the adjustment in the labor market, will come through higher unemployment rather than lower vacancies. So let's look at the UV ratio in the JOLTS because I think it could
That's a
influence our decision.
great heads up for our clients.
And otherwise, we will
Yes.
get our usual and much disliked from an economic perspective, ISM. The thing is, I understand it's important for traders. And on the website, we have big, detailed statistical guides on how to trade those. But the reality is, those surveys have decoupled from GDP growth.
People, they've been watching it for so long, and everyone's, on the lookout. But cool, that's cool. Okay, so obviously, JOLTS should be one of the key things in the
And in
payrolls.
terms of speakers,
Yeah.
we have Williams and Waller. We know that Williams wanted to cut in July. Waller, it will be very interesting. I think it will be a bit of a victory lap for Waller because at Jackson Hole, one of the papers that was presented made the case for Waller's view of the world. And so it will be very interesting to see if Waller hints at 50 basis point cut, or at least front loading. He'll never say 50, but front loading will be the key word to look for.
Yeah.
And Waller will be speaking on Friday, so after JOLTS and after NFPs.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because I guess if this 50 looks like it's, getting hinted and stuff, and to your view, maybe that's the time to kind of fade the further cuts, because your view, which I would agree with, the front loading, isn't this the beginning of a is most likely not the beginning of a very big and a much faster cutting cycle, unless the data is significantly different than what we're talking about. But I'm pretty sure, the rest of the world, let's say just from an FX standpoint, my 2 cents would be, if it looks like they're going to cut 50, and you look about how central banks have behaved, Canada, main Bank of England, ECB, they're not even Bank of Japan, how slow they're going, and how much stronger growth is, and still a bit higher inflation. The US economy is much stronger still from the data. So that this will be at least in the short term, this if that cut looks like that 50 base point cut, that's going to be pretty bearish for the dollar, would be my guess. Unless there is some perception that this 50 basis point cut is because the economy, the recessionistas are back, but obviously that's not our base case. If it's just like, oh, it's a little bit concerning, that's where we can do 50 front loaded, that's, you can imagine comparing that to Bank of England and ECB. It looks like an outlier considering situation different in the US. So anyway.
Yeah, we Americans tend to be bolder than foreigners when it comes to monetary policy.
Exactly. Okay, quick ones over the past week. John Tierney, we just put out an interesting piece, kind of let's call it like on the ground, from his travels all across the US, not just on the coast. And it's a really interesting thing, just generally on the politics, economy, everything there. Obviously, you talked about the stuff you did looking at the non-farm payroll revisions, which clients should look at, updating the weekly investment view. Ben's put out some new ideas on Dollar Swiss. Mir's just taken some profit on Taiwan, on Dollar Taiwan trade, and a whole bunch of interesting stuff. Obviously, Sam's model stuff, things around all the new model work that we're doing. And then we should be releasing a few new things next week, which we can talk about, especially in the emerging markets, kind of flows and analytics space, which should be super cool. So I'll just kind of wish everyone, a lovely weekend, and for our friends in the US, a great Labor Day weekend. I kind of miss that. And for those people in the Hamptons, hopefully not too much traffic. And hopefully nice warm weather, I guess.
Yeah,
And
the
goodbye.
Labor Day weekend at the beach, such a nice tradition.
Exactly. So, okay, cool. All right. Good luck. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.